Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
Coming to you live, recorded, of course, from Victoria Park, looking out at the mouth of the Hillsborough River on this absolutely perfect day in the first week of October 2025. Patty?
Yeah, we're, according to the weather, we're possibly, yesterday and today, reaching record high temperatures. There are still boats out on the water. There were kayakers that just went by, as well as I can't believe the amount of traffic in Victoria Park in at this time of the morning, which is around 9:30 or so.
If you're looking for a great walk, start at Brighton Road, walk all the way to the other side, which is close to the bridge leading to Stratford, and loop back, and you're into about 8 to 10 kilometers. This is the walk that I typically do, and I know you do, but today it's just an abundance of activity, and we're supposed to be getting into 25 degrees this week. I did wash the or pressure spray the winter tires. It might be a bit premature for that. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful winter. So if you're new to the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, we put the real in PEI real estate and have recently created a Facebook group, which we're into 848 members. So if you have any questions or you want to learn more about PEI Real Estate or Prince Edward Island in general, visit the Facebook group. And we've also started a LinkedIn group. So you can check that out as well, which caters more to the business clients, I have to assume.
Yeah, and that's still in its infant stages because that was just set up in the last couple days. So we're going to start making some regular posts and content in there, but that hasn't yet taken off. So hopefully by the time this episode is released, there is some activity in that on that LinkedIn business page.
And a special shout out today to our fact checker, which is Tricia Campbell. And one thing you may not know about Tricia is she is this huge world-renowned fudge entrepreneur. Maybe you can tell us more about the Sweet Company in Wood Islands and other locations. I know she's planning on expanding rapidly, and she's got the best fudge in town if you're coming to the island or if you want to order online. I'm not sure if she has e-commerce set up yet.
I don't know if she would yet say they are world-renowned, but very well-known on Prince Edward Island. So the Sweet Company was originally established in 2005. Tricia, along with two of her business partners, took over the company in 2024. They have done a great job with regards to the Sweet Company and marketing it, because I guess before it was word of mouth. It did very, very well word of mouth, which talks about the quality of the fudge and what they sell, which what they do sell is obviously fudge. They sell bulk candy. They sell local products. So if you are visiting Prince Edward Island and doing a house hunting trip possibly, or scouting it out, or it's just on your bucket list and you just want to come and see the red soil and check out some of the sites around Prince Edward Island, make that a must-stop place.
And Wood Islands, if you're from off island, is actually the entrance to the ferry, which leads to Nova Scotia. So if you are going to come here and you're going to take the bridge, think about exiting via the ferry or vice versa, because it is a fun trip. It's not that expensive, and the kids will absolutely love it. It's a short trip. There's a restaurant on board. On a beautiful sunny day like this, it certainly beats driving across an 8-mile bridge.
Yeah, and all I'll say is if you have a local business on Prince Edward Island that you would like us to try out and perhaps do a little shout out of your product and what you have to offer, please feel free to reach out to us. We would be happy to be able to give you a little bit of a promotion shout out.
Getting into the Facebook group, and we usually try to cover at least one comment or discussion. This one comes from one of our most entertaining and active members, which is Sandy. I believe Sandy runs a petting zoo out towards, I'm trying to think, is it New London or out that way, Cavendish? I don't remember, but it is an awesome operation. And what Sandy says here, which made me fall off my chair in the office, and I think it did the same to Patty, is somehow the topic came up about how much real estate agents make. And he makes the statement that says, on average, a real estate agent is making $30,000 a sale, and they only need to sell 4 properties a year to make $120,000 a year. Sandy, that is, how do you put this?
False.
Absolute nonsense. I replied and said, maybe if you're in Beverly Hills or Monte Carlo, but certainly not anywhere else that's normalized. The average really hasn't changed, which is surprising. I looked at the National Association of Realtors. I looked at the stats in Canada. And even with the COVID craziness and prices going through the roof and all that sort of stuff, the average real estate agent income in Canada starts at $24,173 and goes as high as $134,783 with a median. And this is the consistent number. And this is in U.S. dollars in the States and Canadian here. So we're actually making about 38% less, whatever the dollar exchange rate is, $46,212. And then they go on to say that according to many sources, but the average typical realtor at 45 to 60 a year. So no, they're not making $30,000 a sale. And there is some more stats here. I won't get into it because we're going to move on. But $45,000 a year, because probably, you know, based on Parentel's Law, 80% or 20% of the people are doing 80% of the business. The vast majority of them are probably not doing a lot.
Well, and based on the stats that I have pulled just for our province, Prince Edward Island, I would say, I'm just trying to remember the last number that I did. The 80-20 is very close. I believe on PEI, there was about 23 or 24%. It was just a little bit higher. Hadn't even made a dollar in, I believe it was 2023, which was still a good year. So there's a bit of a misconception.
Not for them, it wasn't.
No, not for them, it wasn't for sure. But there is a misconception about realtors that we just, money's falling out of our pocket. We make these great big checks and we drive fancy cars. That's just not the case. And if you really understood how much work is involved in trying to educate and prepare and set yourself up to become a successful real estate agent, you'd realize that, again, with the numbers and that, it's not an easy business to get into.
Not to mention the endless drama.
Yes, there is definitely a lot of, we're almost psychologists on top of being marketers and real estate professionals and negotiators. We wear many, many hats.
Moving along here, one of the most annoying questions that you get when you have an overpriced listing a year or two later, when the vendor, the owner says to you, Patty, what are you going to do to market my property differently? How do you respond to that, considering it's not you? Because I know your marketing and you do a great job, an exceptional job, and do a lot of things that a lot of the other agents aren't doing. Seems to me the problem is in the seller's court and not yours. They seem to be the issue.
Yeah. So there's a formula in real estate that, yes, marketing is very important, but so is price. So depending on the marketing, the price put on will determine how many and the will determine how many days on market it's going to take, and also the location, obviously, and there's other factors. But if the property is priced high or overpriced, it's going to take longer days on market based on what the norm is for that type of product. So if it's a two-bedroom home, obviously that's going to have more days on market because there's not a vast market of buyers out there looking for two-bedroom homes. If you're your standard three-bedroom, two-bath, whether a garage or no garage, well, you need to be a little precise with regards to pricing those, and you will end up meeting our average days on market, whatever they are for that at the time that you're listening to this podcast. You price it properly. So when I did just get this question about a month and a half ago, I had a listing that was coming up for renewal, and they asked me, okay, well, you've had this listing for a few years now. What are you going to do? Why should I sign back up with you?
And you told them you shouldn't. You should go away and find somebody else to annoy.
I feel like I'm pulling my hair out sometimes because I told this client that when we were starting to move their properties, they felt that it was underpriced, so they raised the price of the property, and then for a couple years after, it was crickets. And I kept reminding them that every time we signed up to renew it again, and I said it really is price, because we were moving them based on the marketing that we were doing out there. So between the marketing and the price we originally set for the properties, it was successful. But once you increase the price, it doesn't matter what a realtor, you can ask your realtor this question over and over. If you're confident in what representation of the property is out there, whether it's drone, if it's a property that's appropriate for drone imagery, if they've done professional photography, professional videos, even the candid videos, Michael, that you know we have done, and I know you're back on doing the candid walkthrough videos of properties, it doesn't matter what the price, if the price is over what market value is, it's not gonna sell it. So there's no magic. Where are you gonna advertise it? Where are you gonna place it? Are you gonna advertise in the States? I've had people pick specific countries around the world and said, you need to take my overpriced listing and market it there because they're willing to pay anything for it. Have you had that?
I've had all kinds of crazy, nutty schemes shared with me from people that know absolutely zero about real estate and think there's this secret place somewhere on earth, whether it's Dubai or China or Scotland or it's some magazine that caters to horses or whatever. And the bottom line is, Warren Buffett said, real estate is priced fairly. And the reason it's priced fairly is because people know what the prices should be because there's so much market data out there. And if they don't know, they can ask their buyer's agent to share it with them. But to think that someone's going to pay $1 million for a house that transacted a month ago or a year ago for $350,000 to somebody on the world that's not going to do their research. I mean, people are usually reasonably bright, especially ones cutting $1 million checks, and they're not going to buy something in a country that they've never looked at or a province they've never visited and know nothing about just because it shows up on a website or in a magazine somewhere. So that's some of the crazy stuff we deal with. At the end of the day, if your property's on the market for years and years and years and years, chances are it's not the agent if their marketing is in place. It's the price is not relevant to the market. No different than Apple deciding we're going to raise the price of the iPhone to $50,000 just for something to do. And then Apple comes along to their marketing people and says, well, why is this iPhone selling? It's your fault. Shouldn't matter what we put it on for. That's what we deal with. And I had the same thing last week. The old, oh, what are you going to do differently? Nothing. I'm doing well, here's what I'm doing differently. I'm letting your listing expire, and I'm giving you the name of another agent that has more patience than I do.
Well, this particular listings, because there was a few properties, I redid my comparative market analysis based on what that particular type of property is selling for today. I put in an email to this seller, outlined where I felt their properties should be positioned. I know they read the email. They chose not to respond to me. And they listed, can you believe this, with another realtor at the price in my CMA, which I know I would have been able to have sold it if they allowed me to list it at that price, but they're starting a fresh new relationship with somebody else and giving them to the price that I had, I just outlined, which has been pretty consistent. I'll also point out, when you list a property, depending the time of year, you could list a property on a Friday and then do a CMA the following Friday or a month from now. And throughout the year, it is like a sliding scale. So what the price may be for this month might be a little different next month. That's why fair market value is so important, because it is going to slide sometimes. The price might go up a little. The price may go down a bit. So you want to make sure if you are pricing at fair market value, that's where those who have success in selling their homes find their success at, is fair market value range.
The funny thing is, I did the exact same thing. I emailed this client. I said, it's coming up for expiry. I don't want it. I said, here's an agent that might be able to do a better job than me, which is a nice way of saying, I don't want it back because it's just not worth the drama and the pointless conversations. And this person actually read the email too and didn't respond.
Wow.
Good thing we track our email.
Well, maybe they're just as they looked at the history on the MLS, did a quick CMA and determined, I don't want this overpriced listing. Now, they should have gotten back to you and at the very least said, thank you for dropping my name. I'll follow up with the client and then they can make the determination whether or not they feel they're a good fit to take on that listing and represent that client.
Well, I didn't share their name with another agent. I shared the agent's name with the seller.
Oh, okay.
To clarify, I wouldn't share clients' information without their permission.
Okay, good.
More craziness in the real estate world in PEI, and I'm sure this is happening everywhere. We've talked about all the positive benefits to artificial intelligence, otherwise known as AI. I came across an interesting listing that was hilarious, to say the least, and I didn't realize that palm trees were growing in PEI.
No way.
I might have exaggerated there, but basically what they did is they took what is essentially a farmer's field with a clay or shale dirt road running through the middle. They applied artificial intelligence to landscape the whole subdivision, put houses in the subdivision, driveways, beautiful homes that you'd never see here because they all look like they're built for a southern climate and they'd probably get blown away here on the island or snow infiltration through your living room. But they actually used AI to represent this subdivision, and it was an absolute cartoon. So I did read here. It says in our realtor code, Article 13, all advertising promotion of property shall accurately reflect property and other details, which is the point of this. When you look at the pictures, you should be seeing what the property actually looks like. Agreed?
100% agreed.
So they do mention here that there should be a disclaimer if they're not accurate, but I don't think that gives you a license to completely fabricate 100% of everything and then say, oh, by the way, this is created by AI. It may as well be a picture of something from Uganda, because it's just as relevant as you taking a farmer's field with a clay road in the middle and making it seem like it's some uphill subdivision in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, I do have a hard time. I do know some agents will put on their pictures this photo because you can virtually stage homes now. You can virtually unstage a home and make it empty, have the picture show empty rooms. You can put grass, like you said, you know, all the AI modifications to the product. And at the end of the day, we are supposed to not have processed images of our properties on the MLS. Now, I'm okay if some people can't visualize and see, you know, a home. I've had many sellers say to me, I don't like the dirt around because it's a new build. I don't like the dirt outside. I know some realtors put grass. Okay, well, I might put some grass. I said, but I'm going to have to put a big text across the image saying that this image has been modified or virtually staged because you're essentially virtually staging it with grass.
Well, this was beyond reality.
Wow.
And they had a little footnote in there that says this is a conceptual drawing. I know what happened. I suspect the vendor is a computer person, and they said, why don't we use these photos? And I got a bunch of houses that were developed by AI, or maybe they downloaded some drawings from somewhere else, and we'll use this to represent the subdivision. But from a buyer's perspective, it's not fair to people, because I'm going to be driving there, and it might take me a half an hour to an hour to get there, only to find out this doesn't exist in reality.
I will tell just a funny, quick story. I had a client interested in a property quite a few years ago. They thought it looked, because you just get the little thumbnails on realtor.ca, they thought it looked really nice and had asked, and they had assumed there was a bunch of mature trees, even though the trees looked a little odd to me. So I blew it up, and they were all cartoon-drawn trees on this little image. Now, someone took a lot of time because they were individually drawn trees. I don't recommend people do that. once I blew up the picture and I sent it to my client, she thought it was quite entertaining and amusing. However, if somebody assumed this was a treed property and they never took the time to actually zoom in to determine, are these real? Like this, just the color was a little off, and which is what made me go down that rabbit hole of looking. Someone took the time to color trees on the property.
What's your thoughts on conceptual drawings of houses that the seller can build for you? In other words, this particular subdivision, they sort of implied, or maybe they stated that, oh yes, we can build this house for you. What's your thoughts on that?
But the build would have had to have started at the very least, correct?
No, it's a blank piece of land. They have a picture, a house they'll build for you, and a story.
As long, we have one of those in Charlottetown. It's on their for sale sign. It's a virtual drawing of what could potentially go on that property.
Would you buy it?
That particular one, no, I don't
like
the style.
Would you buy any concept?
No, I would need to see it.
My thoughts are this. Why wouldn't I tender the build out to multiple builders to get a reasonable price rather than just paying somebody probably top dollar to build something that I can probably get built for less and maybe even higher quality and more square footage and more customized for my needs?
100%.
So be cautious when you're buying a concept home because you may be overpaying. The concept homes, they basically show those because they're trying to give you an idea what someone might build here. And as an added bonus, they'll build it for you, but there may be or may not be additional markups there. So just like most architects, usually you're going to end up tendering out this stuff to see who's going to give you the best price.
But the other thing as well, Michael,
and quality and everything else. Sorry.
Do you feel that if you are putting proposed concept structures, this is what could be essentially built, and you could end up sabotaging your ability of selling properties in that subdivision if it's a concept that they don't like. So you automatically go, I don't really like that style home. If that's what they're proposing to put in there, I think I'm going to find another subdivision or another piece of land. It's a bit of a risky marketing strategy.
Essentially, what I find, it's people that own subdivisions that are builders that are trying to sell builds.
Yes, but they build them and they probably have homes that they've already completed.
Oh, in the past, absolutely.
Correct. Next, we have clients all the time that will reach out to, like, as a listing agent, here's a scenario. As a listing agent, I will have a buyer try to find my seller client directly saying, I've been trying to get a hold of your agent and I couldn't, and I'm interested in your property. To that, I'd say that is not true because I am right on top of my phone calls and I'm on top of my emails. I have my own rule of thumb. Every agent will have their own text messages and phone calls I typically get back to the same day, unless it is, you know, after 6-7 o'clock. If it's an agent wanting to get in my house, my client's house, I will definitely make sure I respond to that, and so they don't miss out on a showing opportunity. If it's a phone call, I do have family time, so it'll be the next day. Emails are within a 24-hour period. So one of the things that we get asked how to contact an agent faster or quickly.
What's the best way to get an agent's response right away?
Yes. And that's kind of an unfair expectation to assume. We're not McDonald's. You don't pull up to the window and we're right there ready to respond immediately. I have a business. I have other clients that I look after. And when I'm with those clients, I give them my undivided, or I should be giving them my undivided attention. There's always extenuating circumstances where I will let a client know I'm in the middle of a negotiation. So if you don't mind, I don't want my client to miss out because I'm with you, which they then should receive the message that I would be doing the same for them because that's very important to me. What I would be saying is text message for most realtors is your quickest way to get a response. Point number two, I would say if you are a buyer and you're trying to play realtor and contact every listing agent, you need to probably stop that game. Find a realtor who will be your realtor and representative and will reach out to the agents. They'll do their follow-ups. Again, we respond, like I just said when I started this, if it's an agent and it's even in the evening hours, I make sure I get back to them because I'm representing a seller and the seller has entrusted me to make sure that I respond to leads, inquiries, other agents in a timely manner and fashion. So agents have priority in my after-hour time slot. Again, I'm not somebody that feels a buyer should be reaching out to each individual realtor because we've covered this in previous episodes, why that works against you. And then saying, because this is one of the situations that has happened to me, I've reached out to your realtor and she's not responding. I've had to show my clients a few times screenshots and just said, they contacted me 30 minutes ago. And because I didn't answer their call 30 minutes ago or less than an hour ago, they are using that as a tactic tool to discredit and say now they've got permission to go directly to the seller.
What they probably did is they tried to initiate a communique with you, whether it's voice or text, coming from some unknown number, maybe it's a Skype number from Albuquerque, and they didn't, invariably, they never leave a voicemail, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They never leave a message. The text may not even explain what they're looking for, and it's Sunday night at 9 p.m. Moving along, Patty, we have other stuff here to cover.
Well, that was my last point. When do you move on from waiting for a realtor? If you're trying to establish a communication with a realtor to have a buyer's representative or you're looking for a listing agent, I would say as a rule of thumb, you should hear back within a 24-hour time period.
If you contact them between 9 and 5, Monday to Friday. We're not running a 7-Eleven here. And most agents are busy dealing with clients all weekend, and they got better things to do than respond to you 9 o'clock at night on a Sunday night, right?
Yes, but they could always just, again, 24 hours. If it's a Sunday night, you should hear back first thing Monday morning, Ben.
Oh, for sure.
As long as they don't have another job, of course. We're talking full-time realtors able to respond
at the 7-Eleven.
In a timely manner. Okay, moving along. Next thing is dryer fires are a real concern in Canada, which I didn't realize the numbers with regards to this, Michael. So an interesting stat, in Canada, 2,700 home fires occur annually as a result of not properly servicing or cleaning your dryer ducts and maintaining them.
And you know what?
What?
I would guess that these fires could or may be directly proportionate to the length of the hose leading outside.
I know.
How many houses have you been in? And we know a few offhand that the dryer is located in the kitchen, but it vents through a 45-foot hose that goes out to the backyard.
Yeah.
That's just a recipe for a disaster. I don't think the dryers that are vented through a wall, you know, you're talking 6 inches here, are going to be anywhere near as problematic as dryers placed in houses in convenient locations where the dryer vent was an afterthought and it's never being cleaned.
Yeah, so if you're constructing a new home, please keep that in mind and place it where it has the shortest amount of duct work required for the external outside wall.
Vent it into the teenager's bedroom.
Oh my goodness.
You won't want to hang out as long.
And as a buying idea, when you're purchasing a property, whether you're doing it, it shouldn't be a criteria, well, we're not buying this house because the dryer ductwork is too long, but be mindful of the location of the dryer and where it actually is, you know, ducted outside or vented outside to, because the longer that is, in my opinion, you should be getting that serviced a little more consistently. The shorter, you may be able to go a couple years. If it's a long hosing system, I would be saying probably on an annual basis, you should be getting someone in, no different than your heat pump, your dryer, your ductwork, all of the above.
Or what you can do is what I did, which I thought was fascinating. I went onto YouTube and I looked for how to clean your dryer vent. And this guy had a system where he uses a leaf blower to clean the dryer vent. And he constructed a tool that would shove this brush down the dryer vent and clean it out. Bottom line is, have it done probably on a yearly basis at the maximum, and make sure you stay safe and you don't become one of the, what was it, 2,700 fires in 1 year in Canada.
Can you imagine you have a house that's side by side and you're sitting outside and it's your neighbor's annual cleaning out my dryer duct day, and they put their leaf blower on and all of a sudden you just get a whole cloud of lint dust and everything blowing into your barbecue and in your supper.
Actually, it doesn't work that way, because the way they did it is they put pantyhose on the vent to collect the debris.
Okay, we'll see. That was a missing piece there. But that, so don't forget the pantyhose if you decide to go with Michael's using a leaf blower to clean out your dryer ductwork.
Yeah, just go onto YouTube and look for cleaning out dryer vent with pantyhose and the leaf blower.
Okay.
Apartment buildings. What's one of the major concerns when you're buying apartment buildings anywhere on planet Earth?
The vacancy?
Regulation, in my opinion.
Oh,
in Maine.
Absolutely.
Is the rent going to be controlled? Is the rental board, whatever it may be, in Prince Edward Island, it's IRAC, I-R-A-C, which you can find at irac.pe.ca under property, is the governing body for apartments. And they basically dictate how much you increase rents, and they protect the tenants and blah, blah, blah. Make sure when you're buying property on Earth that you understand the regulation in that particular province or state or country. In PEI, IRAC is pretty well pro-tenant. In other provinces, they're pro-apartment owner. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, they could be. And that's really important to make sure. And you're absolutely right, Michael. I know my daughter lives in Halifax, and it is very much pro the landlord or the apartment building corporation owner. And every year she signs, basically as part of her lease renewal, her eviction notice. So you have to make sure you know what the regulations are before you start writing checks or getting all excited. I'm going to get into the rental property business.
Yeah, and you're going to find out, and you can find this online, you can find out what the allowable rental increases are in PEI. In some years, it's been zero. Other years, I think last year or this year, it's 2%. Well, how does that make any sense when you've got inflation of 2 to 3% or whatever it may be? So you're actually receiving less monies, plus your building's getting older, so you're conceivably your maintenance and upkeep and renovation costs have gone up. But you've got a government body regulating how much you can increase the rents by, or having you to jump through a bunch of hurdles and do appeals to bring the rents up to market or wherever they should be to cover your expenses. On one hand, they're saying they need more rental properties. On the other hand, they're making it really difficult to own rental properties in certain places. As much as I do know for a fact, there has been apartments that have sold in PEI, quite a few, because of government regulation. They basically just said, why do we own this 30 unit here and we can own the same 30 unit in another province and do whatever we want?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something, again, just to build on that, Michael, if you're looking for an apartment or an investment property like that, and all of a sudden there just seems to be an abundance, maybe perhaps part of your due diligence is looking into regulations, because maybe there's a misalignment there and there's a reason these guys are trying to unload their properties.
Speaking of IRAC, someone goes to buy a property and finds out that the current owner, which is a non-island resident, hasn't applied to purchase the property. So they didn't get approval from IRAC, which they needed to do, specifically if it's over 165 feet of water frontage or 5 acres of property. And that's amalgamated value or
total
value of everything you own. So they go to buy this property and they make an IRAC application. IRAC says, well, the first buyer wasn't approved. What do they have to do?
And they didn't put it in their agreement of purchase and sale?
It's unbeknownst to the purchaser that the owners of the property now never received IRAC approval. So what they typically have to do is they retroactively have to file the application, is my understanding, and pay the 1% fee. You've never run across that.
Yes, I actually have heard of a case where that has happened. So therefore, the buyer wasn't able to purchase it because these sellers were technically never approved. However, they were able to get in, and I don't know the details, so I'm not even going to
create a story. The owners probably paid the 1% fee.
Do you believe the owners paid the 1%? Oh, no, in order to sell it going forward. But how did they get into ownership to have the property registered?
Because the current owners, which were trying to sell it,
correct,
that weren't approved by IRAC, IRAC said, we need an application. And then they paid the 1%. And they may even have paid penalties because they purchased it without an authorization from the provincial government.
And that's what I'm saying is, not sure how they were able to even do that, but I am aware that this has happened. So you don't want to mess around with IRAC. You don't circumvent them. If a property is IRAC applicable, or if the buyer, as a result of their total land holdings already, and this bumps them over the amount as a non-island resident that you are allowed to own, if you are supposed to go through the Land Protection Act and the Executive Council and the 1%, which are the fees today, which they can change, but it is 1% of the purchase price, then that's the process. That's what you need to do.
So how do we know if previous IRAC applications have been accepted or others have been made? It would come down to the LPA database. Maybe you can explain what that is.
Yeah, so the Land Protection Act database, you can put in a parcel ID number on a link within that site on determinations or approvals, and it will tell you the full history of that property if it has gone to IRAC and if IRAC was approved. Was the property identified, meaning identified for non-development? The database will tell you the history if there was an application put forth onto the Land Protection Act or the IRAC.pe.ca site. So just a little tool, something else to allow a buyer to do their due diligence and maybe look into it a little bit instead of having to wait to look at the deed and that sometimes. So next thing we're going to talk about is giving feedback to the seller after a showing. I know this is something that has always been a little bit of a It's a bit of a struggle in our industry. I will give it to you on both sides. From an agent's perspective, if you don't hear back from the buyer, they're probably not interested. However, I wasn't the one that spent 3 hours or 4 hours cleaning my home, rearranging pets and children and schedules and maybe having to pay for supper that night so I wasn't cooking, and the inconvenience that goes in to selling the property. I feel at the very least, a seller it should be entitled and deserve for their time and effort some sort of courtesy feedback from the buyer's agent slash buyer to let them know how the showing went. Is this a property that's of interest? Do you have any feedback? Any recommendations, things that I can do to improve the perhaps showing experience? Is there something that I could fix? Is maybe I did cook a lobster dinner and it totally turned the people off? Or there's some smells. I had the house closed in all day and it just smelt musty. Or suggestions, Michael?
What if I was the showing agent and what I would do is I would show the house and then I would call you and I would just say no interest and hang up. Do you remember that agent from many years ago since retired?
Yes, I
know. That was your feedback.
No
interest.
Yeah, or they ghost you, Michael. They don't give you anything. I know I use a service called Showing Time. I have my Showing Time service set up that for 3 days, every 24 hours, so immediately after the showing, the agent gets pinged a little text reminder to give us feedback. And it's a really easy form. They just have to yes, no, rate the showing, perhaps provide some feedback. I couldn't make it any simpler. That goes on, they get 3 requests for feedback. I know that gets ignored because I've had to deal with this. And then they still ignore you for days after when you send them direct text messages. Just know, look at the whole picture here. Yes, as an agent, I take it as they're not interested. But again, and I did spend time setting it up. I pay for the service in order to have showing time, this software in place to better service my seller. And that's part of the whole package when they sign up with me. They want to, you know, I promise them they should be, and it's not going to be 100% because of, you know, some agents just feel like, well, my client's not interested, they're not interested. Or I'm in my next job now and I don't have time. Please consider the sellers and everything that they've done. If it's a vacant house, I still find it a little bit disrespectful. But you should still do a courtesy feedback response.
Can I order an appraisal on a property I do not own?
That's a very good question.
Where this comes up, and I actually had this happen multiple times, the last time I remember, the seller and the buyer couldn't come up with the sale price. The seller thought it was worth a lot more, was totally unmotivated, didn't care if it sold. And the buyer said that what they're willing to do is they're going to go out and pay for 3 separate appraisals, which probably would have cost them a couple grand, easy, because it was a substantial property. And they would offer the average value of those 3 appraisals. Can you order an appraisal of something you don't own? Absolutely. It's going to cost you money. I consider it due diligence money, but you can certainly do that to substantiate an asking price. But it doesn't mean the home seller or the property seller or the business seller is going to agree with that appraisal or even be motivated to sell at that price, assuming it's less.
Yeah, and it does come down to the seller's motivation. Why are they selling? You can throw any property out there at an inflated price and say, if someone's interested, they'll cut me a check. And if they're not, then they won't. Those buyers, those sellers, it doesn't matter as a buyer paying, prepaying for an appraisal and say, well, according to the appraisers, and again, 3, I mean, that's an interesting strategy. Here's the average between the 3. This is what I'm willing to offer you. It's a big cost and a big risk. Because in the meantime, I don't know, Micah, whether or not this property is under contract with this buyer, but if it's not, and someone else swoops in and they submit their offer, I mean, what I've had is a client in the past insist on doing title search prior to submitting an offer. They wanted to make sure title was clean, clear, there was no issues. So therefore, they were just going to put in an unconditional offer. Well, that took about a week for everything to come into play, only to have this poor buyer client of mine find themselves on a piece of land in a location on PEI that I would never have predicted this, went to multiple offers, and they never won the property.
2-bedroom homes. You recently had a conversation with some home sellers that were listed with other agents. And the statement that you made, which is the same statement I've made many times, is that this house is 2 bedrooms and it's going to be tough to sell. And the ironic part about this, or the funny part about it, was all the other past agents said the exact same thing. So why is that 2-bedroom houses don't sell?
Well, and we started in one of our examples at the beginning of the episode here, talking about 2 bedrooms being a little bit more difficult to sell, which is why pricing was so important on them. Your standard 3 bedrooms, 2 baths have a vast market for residential properties. So it is conducive to families. It's conducive
to 2 bedrooms or 3?
3 bedrooms.
You said 2.
No, 3-bedroom, 2 baths. It has a more vast market of buyers available to that product. When you get into 2 bedrooms, you lose a whole portion, a large portion of that buyer market, because not too many out there, there are retirees, of course, but they're not in abundance of numbers, are looking for a 2-bedroom home. 2-bedroom homes, ideal for, again, retirees, single professionals, maybe somebody with 1 child with no intentions to have any more kids. it still doesn't necessarily meet the needs because there's lots of home offices. You know, people like to have a guest room. Three bedrooms fits the mold. Pricing with regards to a two-bedroom is so much more important. And unfortunately, these particular sellers had purchased when the market was at its peak, and they just absolutely loved the property. Today, now they're holding on to this property. It's been a few years. They can't seem to, and they're scratching their head. What's going on? We loved the property. We've maintained it. We've put in X amount of dollars worth of improvements and updates, and they've got it listed at the price that they purchased it at. Again, was inflated as a result of COVID and the migration that we had across Canada coming to Prince Edward Island because we were so affordable. Unfortunately, it's going to be a loss for them. They are going to be out money as a result of the two bedroom. Now, I have made a suggestion to try to create a third bedroom, which they're trying to get their head around because there is an option to do that potentially. But two bedrooms are harder sales. So as a buyer beware. Make sure that you buy something that allows you an out or an escape plan, and you're not going to be the one left holding the cards going, no one wants this product. There's just not the market for it.
Back in the old days when the dinosaurs roamed the earth and before we had the internet and realtor.ca and our listings were on a centralized database that everyone had access to, you would go into the individual offices in town and you would ask them, what do you have in a three-bedroom bungalow, which would have been the stereotypical house that one would purchase at that time and today probably still is on the island. And the agents would say, here's a couple here, here's a couple here, and Patty has this, and Bob has this. Oh, and by the way, here's a house that we just listed. It's two bedrooms, but you can put a third bedroom in the attic. So you had that interaction, and you had the ability to show potential buyer's agents that, yeah, there's other options. They don't fit into your box, but they can easily be modified. But today, and this is where the problem lies, and the point to this topic is people type in three bedrooms, not necessarily because they need three bedrooms, but because they know if they go to sell, three bedrooms is going to sell a lot faster than a two bedroom.
And that's a really good point because it lacks an opportunity to have a conversation. And you're right, people just look at the criteria. They put in three bedrooms plus, they put in, you know, one, two, four baths plus, garage, no garage. You don't get that opportunity to perhaps really sell that property. You can't put in three bedrooms and then try to explain where you could make that third
bedroom. Well, the pricing is the same way. How many times do you have that home seller that's trying to sell their house for $850, but they tell you they'll look at the offers for $700?
I know.
Those people aren't going to see the house because they may type in, I'm looking for up to $700. They're not going to see your $850 with a side note that says we'll take $700. Patty, it's been an absolute pleasure being with you on this Sunday morning looking out at this pristine, perfect sunny day here in Prince Edward Island. I would like to thank everybody for listening, and I'll let you wrap it up with your spiel.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS Prince Edward Islands, a podcast that has everything to do with buying and selling and a little bit of Prince Edward Island. We appreciate each and every one of you for downloading and listening to our podcast episodes. Also, those who are part of our Facebook community group.
And LinkedIn.
And LinkedIn now. There's lots of great conversations, a lot of support, people putting in their favorite pictures and sharing things about their experiences. So it has high value, and we're hoping to recreate that within the LinkedIn world as well. Thanks for listening.
And if you're looking for the Facebook group, it's Moving to Prince Edward Island, PEI in brackets, with from the Michael and Patty podcast. Everybody have a great day. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, comment the show.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.